Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Reasoning with an Optimist podcast for the week of March 20, 2016. This is Jack Brissett Mills. I talked with my friend Molly from Germany this week, and I want to share that with you. But first, the verses that I wrote for Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul for his week 51. This one's 2 years old now. I wrote 2 years ago. Verse 51. There is a spiral of recognition. The great treasures of this world pour in through our senses, awakening us to the Spirit. And by thus strengthening us, the Spirit of the world, to our joy, awakens in us. And then this one I wrote last year for the same Rudolf Steiner verse. Verse 51a. As I let the beauty, the glory of this spring pour into my soul, I feel what must be its grand motivation. The spirit of life itself bringing images of strength to my inner eye. Yeah, Molly's studying in Berlin, and it was night for her and day for me, and I'm so thankful to talk with her. Hope you enjoy it. Here you go. Thank you, Molly.
Hello.
Hey, Molly.
Hi, Jack. How are you?
Good. We're talking overseas. It's very nice. Underseas, maybe. I think you're 6 hours. You're like a quarter of the way around the world from where I am.
Yes, yes. Normally it's 7 hours earlier in Austin, but because daylight savings just happened, it's only 6 hours earlier. But we don't have daylight savings until the 27th of March.
Oh, nice. So,
wow.
So you're in Germany?
Yes, I'm in Berlin. I've been here since January 11th.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's beautiful here, though. I love it. I love Germany.
So is Berlin one city now? I mean, of course it is, but does it still feel like two cities or is it one city?
I think to somebody who doesn't know the history of Berlin very well, it probably just, or isn't super observant, it will feel like one city.
Yeah.
If you know where the border was, I know where I am, like when I'm in the old East, and if you look extra closely, then there's places where you can still tell. There's many apartment buildings left over from that era in the East that are very starkly different architecture.
Yeah.
And that is a pretty good giveaway. But culturally, I don't think it's too different. It's interesting because I've been here so many times. This is the fourth or fifth time I've been to Berlin, and I've been in most of the larger cities and then some of the smaller little towns. Altogether, I think by the end of this semester, I'll have spent about a year here.
Yeah.
I don't notice that, or I'm not curious about the cobblestone streets anymore. The first time I came here, I took about 50 pictures of the cobblestone streets because that's just not something you see in the
yes,
U.S.
Yes, yes.
And the license plates are different. They're like thin and long.
Yeah.
And the first time I was here, I took so many pictures of license plates. But of course, now that doesn't even catch my attention. I wouldn't even notice it. But
that's
like little tiny things like that that...
Yeah.
Other students notice and like, oh, yeah, that was really interesting the first time I saw it. So I'm enjoying that. I'm definitely enjoying that.
Yeah, I guess North Germany is more industrial and South is more, it's warmer, of course, and maybe it's more beer drinking.
I think that there's a lot of beer drinking in all of Germany. But that's another interesting conversation is the difference in alcohol.
Oh, I bet.
Because the first time I came here, I was 16,
which
is a legal drinking age here, and I've been 16. I was almost 17, and I was staying at a friend's house who had done an exchange in Austin. All of her classmates had been 16 for a couple months at least, and we went to a birthday party, and I was still like, oh, my God, I know it's not illegal here, but it feels so illegal still because it's so ingrained in my head, 21.
Right.
So they're just like very, very, very drunk. Lots of beer, but no hard alcohol. So it's not really the same thing.
You
being really drunk on beer is not the same thing as being drunk on vodka.
That's right.
And I visited that class every single time I've been to Germany now. So I've seen most of the those students 4 or 5 times. The last time I saw them was last summer. they had just finished their Abitur, so the 13th level, all yes. ready to go off to their gap year to travel and then go to university.
Yes.
And they all did extremely well. This class did so well on their Abitur. And we were partying afterwards, and it was such a stark difference in the atmosphere because there was a social activity and drinking was part of it. The social activity wasn't drinking. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, yes.
In the U.S., in college, after college, many years after college, like the activity is drinking, and then your other friends happen to be there.
Yep.
But I commented to one of the students in Freiburg about how I noticed how different it was hanging out with them in the evenings last summer than it was 4 years ago. One of the guys, actually, his name is Robin, said, oh, yeah, that's because our drinking age is so much younger that by the time you have to be an adult and be responsible and do things and, you know, go out into the world, you're done with that excessive partying. Before 21. It makes so much sense.
Of course it does. I didn't want you to go without my asking you. Over here, we think the rest of the world, if they ever found out we were American, especially Texan, they would give us a terrible time. I don't think that's actually true. Whenever I've been out of the country, it's an individual meeting an individual. It's not a group meeting a group. So they see me and they treat me the way they always treat me, the stranger. It doesn't matter that I'm American, actually. What do you think about that? Do you feel that, you know, we have such a bad image right now, especially with our elections coming up. People are totally, they're afraid of us now. How crazy are you people really getting, you know? Tell me about it over there.
I've noticed a significant change in that, actually. So the first time I came here was in 2011, the spring of 2011.
Yep.
So 5 years ago, and there's a difference in how the majority of people interact upon first acquaintance.
Yes.
For example, the first time I came here, I was working in a small surgical hospital in Bavaria, Neustadt an der Aisch, a tiny little town of about 500 people. And one of the doctors knew that I was from Texas. And one of the doctors, he probably never even learned my name. He called me Miss Texas or Dr. Texas the whole time I was there for three different internships over the course of 4 years. He called me Miss Texas or Dr. Texas or Frau Texas. And I started answering to that because that's how he interacted with me. So in that incident with that doctor, it was really all about me being from Texas. But for the most part, until this trip, it's been, oh, cool, you're American, but also that doesn't really matter. You're just a person, an individual, and I'm an individual.
Yeah.
So I can speak to that too. But this trip, almost without fail, not 100%, but almost without fail, every German that I meet almost immediately says something about Trump.
Yeah.
Almost immediately, within 5 minutes of meeting them, says something about, what's up with Trump?
Yes.
And then it is very much about the fact that I'm American.
Yes.
Not Texas specifically, because Texas really isn't on board with Trump so much.
No.
They're kind of with Cruz, but it's very different. And there's some aggression about it.
There was a great, I see Twitter feeds now and then, and this man said, if we had done what you guys did in Chicago, we had this big clash of protests against Trump at the same time that...
Yes.
Yeah, anyway, this resulted in the closing down of that particular rally, and then it happened again in Kansas City. This man said, if we had acted this way in Germany, the way you guys did in Chicago, my grandparents might be alive right now being 92 years old, but they were killed because we didn't do it. We didn't fight. We didn't fight when it was coming. We could see it coming. We tried to fight a little bit, but not enough. And so he was the same way I am. It's my duty, especially as a white guy, to stand up and say, no, I am not a white supremacist. I am against white supremacy.
Yeah.
It's a white guy's duty to do that. And so any chance I get, I'll even find Muslim headgear and I'll try to look like the people that they are against. And I will go and I will stand there and let them hurt me because that's my job. I have to allow them to hurt me rather than the minority, rather than who they really mm-hmm. want to hurt. The mood here is really strong that we are going to fight this. We are not going to let the United States become a fascist dictatorship, white supremacist country. We are not going to do that. We are
okay. Good.
So, anyway, so take that along and just say this is. It's not serious enough for war yet, but we're coming. We're getting ready.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen.
That's good to hear because it's very interesting to experience this from abroad because.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't know what's going on.
Basically,
yeah.
The only real interaction I have is over Facebook, which, of course, is not a very good representation.
No, it's whatever you want it to be, yeah.
Yeah, and I've specifically edited my Facebook feed so that I only see information from 20 people
me too.
And then, 10 that I really want to see. So it's very, very skewed sample. Everybody I'm friends with on Facebook is posting about Bernie Sanders. And
yes, of course.
Critical of Trump, of course. So it's very hard to judge what the actual culture around
the
U.S.
It hurts, though. I think you're wise. You know how bad it is, and you don't have to see it. Mm-hmm. I know how bad it is. It is so bad. It is so. It just rips out my soul. Someone will say, share this if you're happy that Obama came along and led us through these hard times. And people will comment, how insane are you? How can you possibly think that he was good? And so then you are looking at this person who thinks you are insane. How can that person be that way? And then you realize what has and hasn't changed in humanity over the thousands of years that we've been around. If you have uneducated people, they will be xenophobic. They will be racist.
Yep.
That's always going to be the way it is. And so the best idea is to educate people so that people will not be that way. But of course, if one political party thrives on idiocy, of course, in the end, they will be gobbled by it. That's what's happening right now. They're being gobbled up by the idiocy. But I think as a general statement of fact, we have to say that any country that promotes idiocy will fail in the near future through fascism and race war, I'm sure.
Absolutely. There's a quote, an interview of Donald Trump back in the 90s, and the interviewer asked him if he would ever run for president, and he laughed and said, no way. However, if I did run for president, I would run for the Republican Party because they're all so stupid. I mean, those are my words, but that's basically what he said.
Yes.
That is exactly what's happening. I've read some interviews with Trump supporters, and the things that they say, I mean, to begin with, it's awful English, very poor grammatical structure.
Yep.
It doesn't make any logical sense. The things they say are so uninformed. Some women's magazine that I subscribe to that usually has pretty decent content. This was a critical article, so it was still decent content. But they were interviewing college-aged women about why they support Donald Trump. And one of the questions was, what do you think that Donald Trump will do for women as a president? And the girl said, well, I think, well, maybe like, what Donald Trump would probably like kind of contribute would be his daughter because she has a fashion design company.
Huh.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
What? So in that sentence, Donald Trump himself won't be doing anything as president. And what you think the American women need is another high-end fashion industry company to make them feel worse about themselves and spend excessive money. So I'm not sure what you're getting at here, but so it's just things like that. It's just so uneducated. And they're all people from universities in like South Carolina and Alabama. And
there's been a lot of money put into the dumbing down of the culture in order that corporations can have the minimum wage worker or less than minimum wage worker in order that you can sway people through false advertising. You and I don't think can be swayed by false advertising. We'll go, wait a minute, what did they say? That doesn't sound right. But if you're made angry by the fact that you don't have any money and then you're given a scapegoat, you could see the value of putting money into that kind of the Fox News idea that you make people angry and afraid and you can then turn them against what you want them to turn against. But of course, the end result is most of these philosophies don't go into 10 or 20 years. The end result is catastrophe for everyone. It's not just the other guy. It's you too. You fall down with mm-hmm. with the rest of us.
Absolutely. I don't know how much news you watch. I would imagine probably not a lot, but I'm curious what your take on the way the media portrays Trump is, because just a little bit of news that I see from over here of the American news outlets is the way that everything is always about Trump. I've basically never seen a real news article about any of the other Republican candidates begin with. And it's so Trump dominated. There's some things about Hillary and Bernie, but not very much. And I just think if the media took Bernie Sanders and advertised him the way that, but in a positive note, of course, that they are advertising Trump, I mean, just the sway of repetition would immediately increase his support.
Yes.
Because it's all about Trump. And it's like, well, wouldn't be surprised if we found out he's like just paying out the media outlets.
Of course, he is the most interesting character, of course. And mm-hmm. when people hate something, they watch the news. That's why the Weather Channel is so popular. You know, it's always, hang on, here comes the storm. You know, anytime mm-hmm. you've got a problem coming, that's a guarantee that they'll turn on the tube again tomorrow and keep watching. And so the Rush Limbaughs of the world make a lot of their money from frightening us. And Donald Trump is so frightening that we are all going to keep watching the news to see more of that frightening mm-hmm. thing. But Bernie, of course, he's doing well without it. It's really wonderful. I'm really so proud.
Yes, he really is.
So proud of the young people of the country. It's really great.
Mm-hmm. I just really hope that he's the Democratic.
Even if he's not, he's changed Hillary in positive ways. That mm-hmm. I saw this great thing that says Hillary is the perfect historical Republican candidate and Bernie is the perfect Democratic candidate. Trump is, of course, way off the charts. And I can totally see that in the old days, if the Republican won, it wouldn't have been so terrible. If Eisenhower won, he would be a little tougher maybe. But in general, it's okay. It'd be totally mm-hmm. okay if Hillary was president. Nothing terrible is really going to happen. But Trump is so far off the edge that we really can't. It will not happen. I swear to you, it will not happen.
No, I don't believe it will happen either. And I wish that there was more of that kind of tone and conversation about him, not fear, because it's the fear that will get you.
Yeah.
But the conversation of, no, it won't.
Yeah.
Really, no, it definitely will not happen. And we shouldn't even say, oh, I would rather any other Republican candidate over Trump. Of course I would. Literally anybody I would rather, but it should just be, he's not going to be president.
No,
that's
not
going to happen.
He's not. I've been proud of Bernie. I've been proud of Bernie. In Twitter, Donald has been threatening Bernie by saying, since your supporters are coming to my events and causing trouble, I'll send mine to your events. And he's been actually doing that. But Bernie, instead of being that way back, he says, please send them. They deserve to see a true and honest politician, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. He's not fighting in the same sense. He's saying, please send them. That would be great. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, it's engaging. He has to engage, of course, but not in the same way that Trump is. It's just mind-boggling to me that people accept Trump standing up there and condoning the violence. Because it's not... it's not the Bernie Sanders fans that are started the violence in any sort of way. It's Trump personally allowing violence to occur in his rallies because he likes it.
Yeah. You know, you can thank the Germans for me. The fact that Hitler existed and was so obviously bad makes it that we will not have Trump. The same with the Holocaust, how it is all the evil that has happened causes the opposite in the future, because we now say we cannot allow another Holocaust and we cannot allow another Hitler. Anyway, the pain that they went through and the guilt that they went through, that they allowed that, is echoing in our souls over here. We will not do it a second time. We will not allow it a second time. That is not going to happen.
Yeah, I have faith. Also, I mean, statistically speaking, the number of people under the age of 30 is significantly more than the people over the age of 30.
Yes.
And as a whole, they tend to be pretty liberal. So I think as long as people go out and vote, statistically, it won't happen. even from, you know, just the numbers, it won't happen. But then, you know, hopefully on aside from the numbers, I also say on just a confidence and moral level that it's not going to happen.
You know, it could be, I've been thinking of writing something about this. It could be they, the racists of our culture, know that they're dying. They know that they're at the end. The mm-hmm. last structural yep. racism is being eliminated. Even the flags of the racists are being removed, even from the most racist states. They know they're ending. They know that with the success of equal rights for transsexual and gay people, they know that they are losing. And so this could be, and I think it's very reasonable to say that this is their suicide, and if not just suicide, a murder-suicide. If someone is really angry with their life, they may kill themselves. But those other people who are angry, they try to kill others with them. And I can see this whole rising of the racists as their last gasp. It's totally understandable that they realize this is the end. It's not going to go any farther. We're almost to the point where this is totally not. You know, I was thinking this word politically correct was invented to belittle the fact that what you're talking about is don't be racist. And so we mm-hmm. we made it a euphemism for racism. We said be politically correct, and I'm tired of being politically correct means I'm tired of not being a racist in public anymore. I think we have to erase that.
Exactly.
We have to erase that term politically correct now and just use the regular term. You are a racist in public. You're not allowed to do that anymore. We all agree that that's no longer allowed. And it makes them furious, of course. And they don't want to live in a country where they can't be racist in public. They don't want to do it anymore. So I can see that they're just trying to bring the whole country down with them.
Mm-hmm. But I 100% agree.
Yeah, but we're not going to let it happen. This place is too good. No. It's too good of a place. This country is so marvelously wonderful. It's such a great place. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that we have the goodness in us, but maybe we sleep now and then, and I think we're waking up now. It's not going to happen.
I think so, too. It's interesting to look at the history of the U.S. also, because there's always been founded on this idea of progress, but of course that's originated in like industrial progress and things of that
yes,
nature.
Yes.
And it manifested in political progress because it, without a doubt, the founding of the U.S., a concept of the way the U.S. founded was a very novel idea.
Yeah.
And I like to think and look about the different types of meanings that progress has had for the U.S. over its existence.
Yes.
And I like to think that we're creating a new meaning of progress now that sort of culminates all the other, you know, women voting in the 20s, the 60s, et cetera, movement through, well, both the 60s and the 1860s and 1960s, and it all pulling together.
And of course, the practicality was always way behind the idealism. We say in the Constitution everyone's equal, but no, it's not really true until a mm-hmm. war and then we say women can vote, but it's only white women, and it's only, you know, mm-hmm. we say these things. Okay, now there's equality. Now blacks are welcome in sporting events. Now blacks are welcome in the army. We say these things, but the reality takes a lot longer. So right now we say there's equality among sexism, and there's equality mm-hmm. among races, and equal pay for women, and we say those things, and we believe in them, but then we have to fight it out. We have to work at it. It takes work. There's a lot of people who don't like giving up. This idea that if you're on top of a hill, King of the Hill, when we were kids, we'd always play King of the Hill, and imagine being on top of the hill, and when you're on top of the hill, you say, okay, let's do it again. And then, or you invite your friends up to be on top with you. No one does that. They say, no, I'm on top of you, and you kick them.
Yep.
We can't stand the United Nations, at least the racist elements among us, because we're the kings. We've got it. We won. Now's the time to stomp on everybody. But instead, no.
Yeah.
People like you and I are saying, okay, this means we can now be equal and everyone can be happy together. No, they want to stomp. They want to keep being the best on top of everybody else. And it's just a clash of ideas. And I think everyone on that side knows they're losing. They're totally losing. They've been losing for 100, 200 years. And it's just hard for them. I can really have sympathy for the races. Everything's going against them for the last 100 years. And this might be their last stand, you know, this Donald Trump might be their last hope.
I think so. I certainly hope so. Yeah. I certainly hope. The last hope to be racist. That should be his new slogan.
To be publicly racist. After this, if he loses, it'll never be possible again, I think. This is it. So.
I think so, too, yeah. But we're just going to change that. Instead of having
his campaign slogan being, please.
Make America Great Again, and it'll be your last chance to be publicly racist.
There you go. Turn that into something on a poster and put it up. That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Thank you, Molly. It's so wonderful to talk to you again.
You too. Absolutely.
Best wishes.
Absolutely.
Best wishes on your life over
you
there.
You too.
Okay.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you. And good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.
Yeah, thanks again. That was so nice. Glad to hear perspective from overseas. Thank you for listening, everyone. And I'll come back next week if you will. This is Jack Brissett Mills. Please leave me a note if you want at myreasoningwithanoptimist.net. And I'll see you again. Bye-bye.